This is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn and Anna Mateo. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will present America's Presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
A German member of the European Parliament says his country should follow Britain's decision and bar 5G technology from Chinese tech company Huawei. Reinhard Bütikofer is a member of Germany's opposition Green Party. He chairs the European Parliament's Delegation for Relations with the People's Republic of China. Bütikofer spoke to VOA last week from Berlin. He said that Germany's decision on whether to include Huawei equipment in its 5G telecommunications network is still up for grabs. 5G is a term for the next generation of high-speed wireless technology. Britain recently decided to bar Huawei equipment from its 5G network. The decision marked a major change from the country's earlier plan to permit the use of such equipment. Britain's decision may very well have an impact on the decision Germany is about to make, Bütikofer said. He added that Britain's earlier plan had been suggested as a model by German supporters of the Chinese company. In the past, supporters of having Huawei construct Germany's 5G network often pointed out, "Look, the Brits knew that much more about Huawei than we do. If the Brits are not doing anything about it, why should we?" Bütikofer said. China-based Huawei is the world's largest supplier of telecommunications equipment, capturing nearly 30% of the market. The company is a leader in 5G networks and a top producer of smartphones. Huawei is currently working on building 5G mobile systems in countries around the world. United States officials pressed Britain to change its position on Huawei and have urged other countries to ban the company's equipment. The officials say they are concerned about Huawei's links to the Chinese government. They have warned that the equipment may include backdoors that could permit China to spy on sensitive communications. Huawei has rejected such accusations. Bütikofer is a strong supporter of a ban on Huawei 5G equipment in Germany. He welcomed the British announcement with a piece of advice for German Chancellor Angela Merkel. "Now it's Berlin's turn to move," he wrote in a message on Twitter. Observers say a German decision to ban Huawei would be a diplomatic win for the U.S. government. The Trump administration is seeking to persuade more countries to take Britain's lead. "We hope we can build out a coalition that understands the threat and will work collectively," U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said during a recent trip to Britain and Denmark. But Bütikofer said his objections to the Chinese company are not influenced by Washington. I oppose Huawei's playing a part in the German 5G network, not because I want to do the U.S. a favor, but because I think it is a threat to German national security, he said. As in other countries, the German argument over Huawei is tied to a larger debate about the best way to deal with China's rising power. Merkel has stated the importance of dialogue with China. But others, including several German lawmakers, see the Chinese leadership using its influence around the world to seek to replace democratic values. Merkel has argued in favor of Huawei based on a no-spying agreement she said her government completed with the company. But Budakoffer notes that Huawei founder and head Zhen Zhongfei is a member of China's ruling Communist Party. "Don't take us for idiots," the Green Party member said during a recent podcast. I'm Brian Lin.
The Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 tracker estimates that over 16 million people worldwide have been infected with the coronavirus that causes COVID-19. It also estimates that nearly 650,000 people have died from the disease, but millions have recovered. So a question many people around the world are asking is, can you get it again? In fact, that was among the most searched questions on Google's website for many weeks in May and June. Whether or not you can catch COVID-19 again after getting infected once is connected to your body's immune system. Does infection strengthen the body's natural defenses, as it does with other pathogens? And if there is an immunity, how long does it last? Right now, there are no clear answers to these questions. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and other groups say they do not yet know how the immune system reacts to COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes the disease. This includes how long the body stays immune to infection from the virus. MERS-CoV is a similar virus. They are both coronaviruses. Patients with MERS-CoV are unlikely to be reinfected shortly after they recover. It is not yet known whether patients with COVID-19 will have similar protection. Antibody tests check your blood for antibodies. Experts at the CDC note that such tests may show if you had a past infection with the virus that causes COVID-19. Antibodies are proteins that fight off infections. They can protect you from getting that disease again. In other words, they give you immunity. However, antibodies are disease-specific. For example, measles antibodies will protect you from measles if you are exposed to the disease again. But those antibodies will not protect you from getting mumps, for example, if you are exposed to mumps. I'm Ana Mateo.
The world's biggest COVID-19 vaccine study started on Monday. A total of 30,000 planned volunteers will help test the effectiveness and safety of a shot developed by the National Institutes of Health and drug maker Moderna. The volunteers will each receive 2 doses of a shot. They will not know whether they are getting the real vaccine or a false version. Scientists will then closely follow the volunteers as they go about their daily activities. They want to see which group experiences a higher rate of infections, especially in areas where the virus is still spreading unchecked. There is still no guarantee that the experimental vaccine will offer protection. The study hopes to answer that question. Dr. Anthony Fauci is the nation's top infectious disease expert with the NIH. He told the Associated Press, "Unfortunately for the United States of America, we have plenty of infections right now to help get that answer." Volunteers from more than 80 test areas across the country will take part in the study. Moderna said the first vaccines were given Monday morning in Savannah, Georgia. Several other vaccine candidates made by China and Britain's Oxford University started later stage studies earlier this month. Those studies involved fewer volunteers than the U.S. ones. They are being carried out in Brazil and other hard-hit countries. The U.S. government requires its own tests of any vaccine that might be used in the country. The aim is not just to test if a vaccine works. It is also to check if it is safe. Through the government-funded COVID-19 Prevention Network, the U.S. plans a new study for vaccine candidates each month through autumn. Each will involve 30,000 newly chosen volunteers. The hope is that by using the same rules for each study, scientists will be easily able to compare the vaccines. In August, the U.S. will carry out its final stages of Oxford University's vaccine candidate. The study of Johnson & Johnson's vaccine will start in September, and the one from Novavax in October. Drug maker Pfizer also plans to carry out its own 30,000-person study this summer. That is a lot of volunteers needed to test possible vaccines. But in recent weeks, more than 150,000 Americans have registered to volunteer for the studies, says Dr. Larry Corey. He is with the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Institute in Seattle, Washington. These trials need to reflect the diversity of the United States population, Corey said at a vaccine meeting last week. He said it is important that the studies include people from different age groups and from populations that have been hit especially hard by COVID-19, including Blacks and Hispanics. It normally takes years to create a new vaccine from start to finish. But this time, scientists are setting speed records. They believe vaccination is the world's best hope against the virus. The new coronavirus was not even known to exist before late December. Vaccine makers got to work on January 10th, when China shared the virus's genetic sequence. Just 65 days later, U.S. researchers gave the first test vaccine made by the NIH and Moderna to Jennifer Haller, a volunteer in Seattle, Washington. Haller is urging others to volunteer now. She told the AP, "We all feel so helpless right now. There's very little that we can do to combat this virus, and being able to participate in this trial has given me a sense of that I'm doing something.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Harry S. Truman. He became President of the United States in 1945, a few weeks before the end of World War II in Europe. Truman took office after Franklin Roosevelt died suddenly of a cerebral hemorrhage. Roosevelt had been president for 12 years, but Truman was new to the position of vice president. Two other men had earlier served in the office under Roosevelt. On April 12, 1945, less than 3 months after he became vice president, Truman was called to the White House. There, Roosevelt's wife, Eleanor, told Truman about her husband's death. Truman was quickly sworn in as president. Shortly after the ceremony, the Secretary of War privately told Truman about a secret project involving American scientists. They were building an extremely destructive atomic bomb. Historians debate whether Truman already knew about the project or whether the information was a complete surprise. In either case, the new president had to decide whether to use the weapon, which he called the most terrible bomb in the history of the world. Harry Truman came from simple beginnings. He was born in the state of Missouri. He, his parents, a brother and a sister, lived in the town of Independence. As a boy, Harry Truman helped his father on the family's farm, but he did not enjoy the work, and he could not play sports because he could not see very well. From the time he was a child, Truman wore eyeglasses. So he developed his interests in reading and music. He was an especially good piano player. Truman was also a good student, but his parents did not have enough money to send him to a four-year college. Instead, Truman worked in a number of jobs, including as a bank clerk, mining company operator, and partner in an oil business. When the United States became involved in World War I, Truman decided to rejoin the National Guard. His guard unit became part of the U.S. Army, and Truman earned a position as a captain. Truman experienced real success in the military. He was an able soldier and leader, and he and his troops fought in battle. When the war ended, Truman kept both the feeling of self-confidence and the friendships with the other soldiers he had formed. One of Truman's first acts after the war was to get married. He married a woman from his hometown. They had been romantically linked for a long time. Her name was Elizabeth Wallace, but she was called Bess. The Trumans remained happily married for more than 50 years and had a daughter named Mary Margaret. In the first years after the war, Harry Truman opened a men's clothing shop with a friend from the military. But the shop, called a haberdashery, eventually failed. Truman soon found a new line of work. An operative from the Democratic Party asked Truman to be a candidate for a position as a judge. Truman won the seat, as well as a public reputation for being an honest, effective public servant. In time, Truman successfully won election to a seat in the U.S. Senate. For the most part, he earned a good public image there, too. He supported the social programs of President Roosevelt and he tried to prevent big businesses or large labor unions from misusing public money. Both voters and Democratic officials liked Truman enough to accept him as the party's vice presidential candidate in 1944. Truman performed well as a candidate, but he did not have a close relationship with Roosevelt or play much of a part in his government. Yet in a few weeks following Roosevelt's death, Truman was leading the country. Truman faced a number of difficult decisions during his two terms as president. Many of them involved foreign policy. His actions helped shape the second half of the 20th century. In his first months after taking office, Truman watched the end of World War II in Europe. He then had to decide how to deal with the war in the Pacific. Japan did not want to accept the Allied forces' demand for total surrender, and Truman did not want to extend the war. So he approved using the atomic bomb on Japan. Truman directed the Secretary of War to drop the weapon on military targets and try to reduce civilian deaths. But the destruction was still terrible. An estimated 192,000 people died in the attack or the effects of the bomb in Hiroshima. Most of the city was destroyed. 3 days later, the U.S. military dropped another atomic bomb, this time on the city of Nagasaki. More than 70,000 people died instantly. The Emperor of Japan called the weapon a new and most cruel bomb. He agreed to his country's surrender on August 14, 1945. World War II came to an end. Truman and his government quickly had to make other decisions about how to react to the new international situation. One of the most pressing concerns was the Soviet Union. Soviet officials sought to expand their influence around the country's borders, especially in Eastern Europe, Turkey, and Iran. Truman and other U.S. officials believed those moves threatened American interests. The United States supported democracy and capitalism. It did not want the Soviet Union's form of communism to spread. So Truman's government put in place two measures to answer the Soviet Union's influence. One was a policy known as the Truman Doctrine. It promised American support to Greece, Turkey, and other democratic nations against authoritarian forces. The measure was a new step for the United States. In the past, the country had tried to avoid conflicts that did not directly involve it. Under Truman, the U.S. government was committed to helping free peoples anywhere by improving their living conditions. A second measure came to be called the Marshall Plan, after Truman's Secretary of State, George Marshall. Marshall wanted the United States to invest a large amount of money in rebuilding Europe after World War II. Because the Soviet Union controlled much of Eastern Europe, the money eventually went to improving the market economy of Western Europe. The Office of the Historian at the State Department notes that one effect of the Marshall Plan was to introduce foreign aid programs as an official part of U.S. foreign policy. Truman also sought to guarantee peace and contain communism in other ways. he supported the United Nations, which was officially launched during his presidency, and he negotiated a military alliance among Western democratic nations. The group became known as the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO. Military alliances became especially important in 1950, when communist forces in North Korea invaded South Korea. The UN agreed to send troops to help South Korea, although many of the troops were American, and they were led by an American general. Fighting in the Korean War lasted until 1953. As many as 5 million people died in the conflict. Neither side gained much territory. But the Korean War had other effects. It fueled the Cold War between communist and democratic forces. It showed the U.S. would really defend other countries against authoritarian forces. It sharply increased American spending on the defense industry. And it helped make President Truman very unpopular. Many Americans believed Truman was losing the battle against communism. During his presidency, the Soviet Union successfully tested a nuclear weapon, and China officially became a communist country under Mao Zedong. Some U.S. lawmakers even accused Truman's government of protecting communist spies. Senator Joseph McCarthy was the most famous of these critics. He launched investigations against thousands of U.S. government employees, as well as movie actors and directors in Hollywood. McCarthy did not have evidence that these people were secretly working for the Soviet Union, but his campaign helped fuel the public's concern over communism, a fear that came to be called the Red Scare. Truman grew tired of the accusations, as well as other political battles. He decided not to seek re-election in 1952. Instead, he retired with his wife to their home in Missouri. At first, many Americans had mixed emotions about Truman's presidency. For the most part, they did not support the Korean War, and they remained suspicious that his government had included communist supporters. But Truman's public reputation rose over time. He became known as a down-to-earth person who would and could fight if needed. His supporters like to say, "Give 'em hell, Harry." Truman is also remembered for taking some steps toward ensuring equal rights for all Americans. Truman supported the racial desegregation of the military and banned racial discrimination in the civil service. But Truman is probably best remembered for the difficult decisions he made during his presidency, especially the one to drop atomic bombs on Japan. To the end of his life, he accepted responsibility for the decision and did not apologize for it. Truman died of natural causes at the age of 88. His remains are buried at his presidential library in Independence, Missouri. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.